Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, now this post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, it's Monday, and I'm joined again by Edwin Almeida. Hi, Edwin.
G'day, Martin. It's all happening. It's prepping begins full on, and Gladys is gone. But I just thank God that she gave me my birthday present last week before she left. Wasn't that kind of her?
It was. Timing is everything, Edwin. We've lost a premier and a... You know, deputy premier and all sorts of things in New South Wales. It's falling apart, really.
I think most politicians have lost their minds as well, Martin.
Well, maybe they've been scared by the Pandora Papers, which, of course, are out today, right? How many politicians and ultra-rich people have stowed money offshore in a slightly risque approach, you know, which may or may not be legal, but I'm sure there'll be some people talking about that.
Well, it's just going to be one of these things that's just going to continue to unravel. But it's all about you can't. Yeah, there's nothing can be hidden these days, and nor can the reports that we're going to be looking at today, like the reports that are being posted on LinkedIn, and also the things that are coming out of China, and moving forward, what's going to happen with this new life-saving red pills that we're going to get, Martin. It really is all happening
still. But before we go there, I think we should home straight in on your mega construction project, right? So Evergrande has nothing on you. You've got this mega and this mega construction thing going on.
Well, yeah, Dusty and Evan have been pestering me. They've said, "Look, shit's happening everywhere, and it's flying everywhere, and we need to get started." So, regardless of the fact that we put the house and the studio renos on hold, thank God we still got a toilet. We've got to. They just want to get going with the veggie, the raised veggie beds. But look, it is in preparation moving forward. I just want to know if any of our followers know how can I give me some gardening tips, growing tips, because I don't know how to grow cat food, Martin.
Oh, don't you just get a can of cat food and put it in the ground, and then a cat food tree pops up? Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah, well, look, I've been investigating about the spaghetti trees as well, but I don't have anybody in Italy to give me pointers on that either, because I really wanted to grow those as well.
Yeah. There was a very, very famous skit from years and years ago about the spaghetti harvest, right? Which basically was all about that, right? That they'd actually plucked the spaghetti off the trees.
No, look, I think it was one of those April Fool's jokes, but that was at a time where you could say things on national TV and you could have a laugh. But now these days, you just got to be careful. You can't look at anybody too closely these days, because you get punched in the nose. It's really scary out there, Martin. People are driving like crazy. They're in a hurry to get nowhere, it really is frightening. And the stuff that's coming out from our mates and colleagues in the legal industry, or what's happening, all these supply chains, what it's affecting, and people are on edge, because obviously a lot of these parcels with that white talcum powder that usually comes over from South America, from my cousins there, it's not happening anytime soon.
And interesting, talking about stories, right? I remember weaving a very strong story for some American visitors about 7 or 8 years ago, right, about the haggis hunt, right? I was managed to persuade them that actually there was a haggis hunt in Scotland each year, right? And they'd actually go out with the beaters and they'd round up these haggises and shoot them, right? And they believed me.
I think you watch too many goodies. They used to egg his thump on the goodies on the show. That was awesome. But if the viewers can see what we're building, and it is on one side, it is very serious, in prepping up for the supply chains that you and Tarek have been talking about, scaring the living daylights out of Dusty and Evan with what's to come. But at the same time, we're also making use of all the materials around the property and in recycling and putting them to good use, so that we can be prepared for 2022 when it really all happens, man.
Absolutely. Just remember to plant the carrot seeds the right way up. That's the critical thing. Otherwise, they go down rather than up. Now, I have to tell you that we've had a bit of a habit here of breaking news, right? Because we broke some time ago the point about the Australian government would actually approve the Chinese vaccine.
Well, look, we did, Martin. We did. And it's rather interesting how now that... the borders are going to be open up, and you and I spoke about that. Our WeChat chatter has mentioned that, and it was only just a matter of time. The pressure's on for our governments to open up. It's going to be a question as to how we could travel. I believe we can travel to Europe and into parts of the States, but yet we can't travel in the state. That's an interesting one. But I do have a solution for that, and that's the tip of the week, Martin. Mm-hmm. The solution for being able to travel in the state, and my tip for being protected from the little bug in the future.
Okay, so what's the tip?
Oh, we're just going to have to wait until the end of the video, Martin.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll have to go all the way through. So, folks, if you want to know what Edwin's tip is, you'll have to roll with us right the way through. But interestingly, there's some hieroglyphics there that you've included this week about the quarantine tables for some of the cities in China. And, you know, they're all 14s and 7s, well, apart from one or two.
Look, it really is rather interesting. Okay, we're going to approve the Chinese vaccine. We're going to allow people to come in. Obviously, we're in a bit of strife. We need students to come back in. We need the tourism dollar also. The biggest thing, one of the takeaways from this, Martin, is the fact that, let's be clear that the Chinese government is not issuing any new passports, meaning if you've got a passport already, obviously you might have a chance of traveling outside of China. But if you don't have one, the government isn't, as far as I'm concerned, or what I've been informed by our WeChat chatterers, they're not issuing any new passports. So they're basically trying to curb anybody from leaving the country, anybody new that's not holding a passport. But this is the interesting thing with regards to the hieroglyphics that I sent you, Martin, is a quarantine table for different cities traveling into China from people traveling into China from different parts of the world, as well as traveling from one province to another province. The one that you see with a big question mark at the bottom that's got the 21 plus 7 plus 28 plus 14 plus 14 plus 14, that's in the at the border of North Korea and China. That's one of the cities. So if you're going to cross that border, that is the that is the isolation or quarantine time that you have to do before you go into the general population. But look at the numbers, and that's how much faith they've got on that vaccine. But one thing for sure, Martin, is that not as many adverse reactions we've been told, but other than the fact that the worst-case scenario is that it doesn't work.
Well, indeed. So the 21, the 7, whatever, that's the... isolation periods, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Wow. Okay. Very interesting. All right. Well, what about WeChat chatter, right? There's a lot of stuff going on there too.
Oh, look, there is. And I think they've hit the nail on the head, Martin, with the solution for first-time buyers. That is what a novel way of buying property. Now, let's point out one thing or a couple of things that a lot of Asian countries, or the way that you purchase property in Asia, you don't get a 95% LVR or 100% LVR or even 105 as we used to get in the past from on top of the incentives that the government dishes out. But over in Asia, in most Asian countries, when you're buying a property there, it's basically in China, particularly with where the WeChat chatterers are speaking to us from, it's a 50% LVR. So and also you're basically borrowing money from your relatives, your savings, your partner. You put it all together in order to be able to buy a property. And and the payments are progressive payments along the way. And once you've made your payments, then obviously then the bank's going to then hopefully lend you the balance. But what they're doing is they've got this novel idea at the moment that's absolutely set the WeChat chatterers over in China on fire. And that is this novel idea of basically buying new property that hasn't been fitted out with all the fixtures and fittings. I'm talking about from electrical cabling, internal electrical cabling to rendering of the walls, plastering of the ceilings, all these fixtures and fittings, carpets, tiling the works. And I've sent you the photos, and which you'll be sharing on the video. It's rather interesting. Now, in some cases, they're saving up to 100,000 yuan, which is about $20,000 Australian in these fit outs, because they're buying it. So they are functioning. The apartments do function, but just picture getting an empty shell, and then it's up to you to fit it out or retrofit it as time progresses. You can do it with new materials, or you can do it with secondhand. So it's a novel and an interesting format. I know, here in Australia, obviously, the banks aren't going to loan you if your property isn't functioning, if it doesn't have a bathroom or a kitchen for that matter. But that's how they're doing it, and that's how they're getting around this the huge costs in buying a property. So as opposed to what we're doing, and that is throwing the throwing more incentives and throwing more money and cash at first-time buyers, which we know only goes to the vendors, be it our owners of established properties or in most cases the developers anyway.
Absolutely. Well, all those incentive schemes that have come in lifted the price of the properties. The money flowed to the developers predominantly. Or as you say, for people who are actually on the other side of the transaction, it just didn't help at all. So, there's a fallacy here about first-time buyer incentive schemes. They do not work. All they do is just lift prices and make it less affordable for everybody else. So, interesting idea of buying a shell and then fitting it out over time, I suppose. I can't see many first-time buyers in Australia going that route, I have to tell you. They like to have the soup, the nuts, all of the polished marble and everything else, right? People don't want to buy, cheap properties. They want to buy expensive properties with all the fittings and everything else. Never mind the cracks below the surface.
Exactly right. Look, we can say all we want about the way that China progresses, but in certain things they do have a novel approach. And look, retrospectively, I've spoken to family members and friends. Young family members and friends that have wanted to come into the market, and they've all said, "Oh, look, I want to buy something new," because you get this incentive and you get that incentive. And I said to them, "Well, look, you may do so, and the government may hand it out, but at the end of the day, you're paying for it anyway. It's not like the government's giving you is gifting it to you. It's just prolonging your pain in terms of pain. How about not looking at the 14 or 17,000 handout?" And buying something that's established and working upwards from that, where you could rebuild it over time. You could suck it up a little bit, suck up the pain for a year or two, and then come up with something a lot better. And in most cases, as you and I have spoken about, a lot of the new developments, whether it be freestanding homes or home developments, in the new subdivisions, you find that if you can buy something of older and established properties with twice as much land, if not two and a half times as much land, then the new subdivisions. I mean, some of the subdivisions are now down to 260 square meters, 240 square meters for a two-story home. In my time, in my days, we used to call that a townhouse, but now they call it a freestanding home, a house and land package, and further afield or closer into the central hubs, you find established homes on 600 square meter blocks, albeit weatherboard, albeit fibro. But you can fit them out. You can fit them out nicely, and at the end of the day, it comes back to the value is in the land. Where have I heard that before, Martin?
Yeah, I think I remember that from the other day, right? A few people, by the way, disagreed with you, saying, "Well, look at high rise." To which I replied, "Exactly. That's why. That's why high rise prices aren't rising. They're actually going down."
That's right. Look, and another chatter, obviously, that the local chatterers, they're actually preparing to bail out of the home properties. Now, these are the forums that we monitor for local investment groups. Predominantly here in Sydney, and we monitor these to see what they're saying, what their appetite is. It's chatter. So, look, what they're basically saying on these chatter platforms, in these chatter groups, is that they're basically getting preparing the homes, and these are homes, Martin, that that they've retrofitted with two or three kitchens, which we've shared in the past. I've shared on Twitter how we've inspected homes that were put on the market in 2019, early and up to mid 2020, and I shared a fair bit of the properties around Chatswood, the North Shore, where where some homes had been retrofitted with kitchens in the laundries and so forth, in order to accommodate for the students and for the little brothers and little sisters, the workers that come in and overstay the tourist visas. So they know that there is a problem, there's going to be an issue, regardless of what the Australian government says, there's going to be a problem and there's an issue. And that is, although we may open up the doors and put out the welcome mat for these people to come in from China, it's trying to get out of the country. That's a bigger issue. So they know that they're not going to be able to rent these homes where they've been converted to 4, 5, 6 bedroom homes with 2 or 3 kitchens. They know that they're not going to be able to rent them on a per room basis anymore. So they're basically fixing them up to put them on the market, because they believe that the market has peaked. Even if it does go up another 5%, they're not going to be renting them out. And we know some people, some friends, chatterers themselves, that are holding onto properties that they haven't, that they've only achieved 30-40% occupancy in the last 18 months. And these are homes in good areas, in good suburbs. And we've been trying to encourage them to put them on the market. And it looks like the chatterers are on tune now, and they're going to start doing that, Martin, because it's very difficult to find Chinese tradespeople that are also part of these groups to come into work, because they are hamstrung. They are out there doing renovations and preparations for a lot of these homes to come on the market, which is a good thing for those that are looking to come into the market, because obviously that's going to quench that fire a little bit from the rising prices.
Mm, and talking about rising prices, I had a bit of a chatter war with somebody else on Twitter the other day, because they were saying, well, I'm seeing no evidence of anything other than prices going through the roof. So I said, well, hang on, look at this one. And I showed them North Ryde units, which are down more than 20% since 2017 and are still falling, right? And I showed them Parramatta units, which are also not doing what people think all prices are doing. And the point is, of course, that the message is, you've got to go granularly, you've got to go and look at individual areas, because there are lots of examples where prices are just not performing. And whilst in other areas prices are very, very high, not so with some of these particularly high-rise. A lot of those are investors, and a lot of those investors are trying to get out. It's clear to me we're going to see a bit of a rise in terms of the number of listings in those areas coming forwards.
Look, definitely, as we said, not only that, but also the fact that the marketing companies and the developers have been really drip-feeding the market. And you can only, we said, that elastic band can only be stretched for so far, for so long, before it snaps. And with everything that's going on around the world, with Evergrande as well, as I said in the previous podcast, that the effect that that's going to have on Australia, apart from everything else, from the bond market and everything else, from the investment, financial institutions that have invested in there and so forth, outside of that, it's going to be really the high risk takers that invested there in terms of shares, as well as invested here in Australia in terms of buying off the plan apartments. And yeah, that could potentially put thousands of more apartments on the market, which is what I'm really hoping to assist the clients and people that want to come into the market, and again to soften that that pressure that to quench that heat that a lot of the mainstream media are talking about. But in terms of housing, Martin, there is a good uptick that we've experienced last week to this week's numbers. There's approximately 7-8% rise in freestanding home listings, which is great. Yeah, we're running at about 5,400 at the moment. We'll go down a little bit before Thursday evening is when we'll pick up again. But I'm hoping that we'll start seeing the 6,500 listings on market, because again, that's going to put a little bit of welcome relief to those that are wanting to come in, because obviously supply and demand, and when there's a bit more competition in the suburb, then people are going to be they're not going to be expecting much higher prices than what the offers are going to come in at. But look, it's a welcome relief, but it's going to be a question as to how long that's going to go for, and whether or not we're going to get more shutdowns, but more rolling lockdowns, which throws everything out of kilter, and people become more fearful, and then they start receding into their shells and come off market. Because understandably, we've got settlements now that are under a little bit of pressure, because the people that we bought the properties from on behalf of our clients, they've been trying to get removalists to go across the border to Queensland, because that's where they bought. So they're now stuck. The settlements are due to happen this week, and it's going to we're in a bit of a conundrum here. It's so all these rolling lockdowns, not helping businesses, not helping people in general, not helping anybody, with what goes on, and all these questions continue to rise.
Well, it is an interesting time. Certainly the listings do seem to be rising slightly, although they're still significantly down from this time last year. But did you notice in the CoreLogic release that came out the other day, which of course was very bullish in terms of what's happened to prices, they actually suggested that maybe prices are now getting to the point where they're actually not going to rise much ahead. So, they're beginning to call, maybe this is a top. We'll see.
Well, it's going to be interesting. It really comes back to the numbers. This time last year, we were over 8,000 listings. By the end of this, the same week last year, I think we were clocking 8,500 freestanding home listings on the market. And currently, we're at 5,400 freestanding homes on the market, and that's been the gauge that we always revert back to when we do our chats. So it will be interesting to see what happens moving forward. But then again, Martin, if the numbers have been so low for so long, historically, the lowest amount of properties listed on the market since Real Estate and Domain kicked off, it's rather interesting. But I feel that 1,000 properties on market, or even 2,000, and God willing, another 3,000 properties on market will swing things around very, very rapidly. But some people say, some may say that's not a big number, or that's not a lot of listings, or others may say, shit, that's a lot of listings in comparison to what's on the market at the moment. But let's not forget, we also look at the individual suburbs. There's something like 638 suburbs in Sydney alone, and 36 or so LGAs. So it's not a lot of listings in individual suburbs. So all we need is the selling agents to go out there and do a little bit more door knocking, so as we can get those listings, and they can come online, so that because it means is another two or three more listings in the suburbs, and things begin to change. People start talking a different tune.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, talking of different tunes, of course, the Australian has come out to say, well, of course, simply get rid of stamp duty and you've boosted affordability. No, it doesn't work like that, does it?
No, look, I've been talking about this for the last 15 years, how the handouts have just not worked. I was very vocal over 12 years ago with regards to what would work. And I wrote something up on, I think it was Property Investing, one of the property investment magazines. And my take even back then was that the governments had to release the grip that they had, that they got on the on new developments. And predominantly, I was always focused on homes being the suitable properties for young families, not high-rise development, but you know, freestanding homes, or, you know, albeit a townhouse or a villa for that matter. But we, you know, what they needed to do was loosen the grip on the duties. Post, I recall when I did when I checked things out back then, the amount of duties that you know, impost duties that builders and developers pay post purchasing of the land, it, you know, makes up for something like 42 to 47% of the cost to build, which is absolutely insane. Yep. And then the government thinks that by giving us a you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 handout, when you look at it back, you know, work that backwards, it works out at about 3%. You know, hand back in order to, you know, to buy in. They think that's going to solve the problems, when in actual fact it doesn't. It comes back to, you know, apart from the issues that you talk about with respect to, you know, the easing of the borrowing regulations and you know, how they've been lax with all that and so forth. Apart from that, it also comes back with the government takes from us on the one hand, they make out like they're giving us a bit of candy on the other, when it's only going to kill us.
Absolutely. Well, as I said earlier on, I'll say it again, first-time buyer incentives just lift prices. They don't actually really solve anything at all. And if they do switch away from stamp duty to land tax, right, that means you're paying every year into the future. But just remember this, folks, you don't know what the rate of land tax will be in later years, right? What it does, it gives the, you know, the local governments basically the chance to lift those rates later if they choose to. So rather than effectively locking a stamp duty element so you know precisely what you're paying when you transact, you're locked into an unknown contract into the future, but you're going to have to pay every year, right? And that, if you're going to hold the property for a long period of time, will end up costing you a lot more than the stamp duty amount, in my view. So again, this is all about you know, their agenda rather than actually owner's agenda. And also the other point there is they'll probably end up, you know, just pumping the numbers later anyway, because they've got to find other ways. And it's also just reflecting, Edwin, that in the UK, where, of course, they have got huge issues with the size of the deficit there, they're talking about lifting corporation tax. They're talking about raising more tax on incomes. People are going to look for all sorts of measures to try and actually grab more income. And it seems to me that just lifting the land tax rate in subsequent years will be just such an easy tease for people. They're bound to do it.
Oh, look, definitely. It's name me a government that's not in a lot of pain at the moment with regards to all the stuff that's been happening over the last 18 months to 2 years. And we're still not out, and we're still, you know, we're still in a lot of trouble, and there's still a lot of work to be done ahead. That's what we've been saying to our followers, is prepare, you know, in the many ways. I'm focusing a lot on recycling, and I'm focusing a lot on reusing secondhand materials. The studio that we're one of the studios that we're renovating, we're looking for a secondhand kitchen. You know, what's the point in spending $12,000 on a kitchen when I could get it from Gumtree or Marketplace for $2,000, and with all the goodies that come with it, and albeit, okay, it's 2 years old, 3 years old, but so what? You look at the savings, but then again, if we get a kitchen custom made, how long is it going to take before you get delivery of it anyway, with regards to the all that spruiking that you and Tarek have been doing about the broken supply chains? So you know, might get a kitchen, but might not have any doors or hinges, Martin.
Yeah, well, that's always the risk, you know. The supply chain stuff is continuing, as is the Evergrande stuff, because I noticed today that they've put Evergrande shares into a trading halt while they sell off a bit of the company to another property company in Hong Kong, which of course isn't solving the problem, which is moving the problem. Right? But people have not yet fully understood, Edwin, that Evergrande is just the tip of the iceberg, right? This is a property issue across the whole of China, and Evergrande is just sort of the, you know, the first cab off the rank. This is going to run and run and run, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's going to be it's a very political, two factions, one wanting to find out what the other one's really doing. Obviously, the government there and the head of the government doesn't want any competition and wants to make sure that that those that would want to think of opposing him, he's going to put them in their place. But look, let's wait and see. But how about our own, what would you call him? General going out there and really shaking things up, Martin?
Yeah, you mean Mr. David Chandler, no less.
Yes. You're going to share that clip that I captured.
In the field on the 1st of July in New South Wales, and we've now got a situation where we've got low head height in a fire stair. Now, that's a problem in itself, because if you're more than 6'2", you're going to struggle here. But if you're a structural engineer, what are you doing here? What's happening here from a structural engineering point of view? Designers have to design a project properly, and engineers have to make sure that when they certify projects, that the structure is up to the design that's been provided. This is simply unacceptable.
For what he shared on LinkedIn, and our viewers can see for themselves and listen to what he has to say.
Well, the point is that this is a very important conversation, right? Because David Chandler is the guy who's worrying about quality of construction and all that stuff for New South Wales. So he's right there at the coalface. And just watch this video. He's not happy, is he?
No, not at all. Not happy at all. But look, the interesting part there, it's a great video. It's a great take, and what he's doing, these short snippets and basically starting to call the industry into line, is great. But if you start reading the commentary below it, you'll see how the professionals are finger-pointing at each other. Nobody wants to take responsibility, Martin.
No, well, it reminded me a little bit of the Reserve Bank and the Treasury and APRA all saying nothing to do with us, house prices. It's somebody else's problem, right? This is precisely what you see in those comments below the video, because everybody's saying nothing to do with me. It's somebody else's responsibility, right? They're all looking away.
Look, they are. But look, again, it's a great little take, and it's some of the, maybe I get the feeling that he's been watching our rants as well, Martin, because you and I have been doing this for how many years? Sharing videos as to the faults and the issues that out there in the in the greater Sydney region with regards to construction. But look, it's good on him. It's about time, and hopefully they'll get it together. And the biggest but that I have, and the biggest bugbear others have commented on in the past, when there was the cabinets got together in order to discuss how the privatization of the private certification was playing out in its early days, and many there that were in that committee spoke about the fact that unless the designers or the architects, the engineers took it from design to construction and took full ownership, this thing was only going to go backwards. And this is what we're seeing. And this also, and I'm not talking about the last inquiry that we had a couple of years ago with regards to high rise issues where David Chandler got appointed as the commissioner, but also I'm talking about in the early 2000s, I think it was, when there was when they did the that discussion around it, and it was raised then, and it was again, it was raised before Mr. Chandler got appointed, and that is there is no ownership. Nobody takes ownership, and hence the reason why in the comments in that in the LinkedIn post, everybody's pointing the finger at everybody else because nobody wants to take responsibility.
Oh, absolutely right. Well, talk about taking no responsibility, right? There was a, quote, terrifying photo issued today from Australia Post, who's basically got so many parcels, I don't know whether they're coming or going in Victoria.
Well, look, then again, Martin, I mean, let's, I think two doomsayers were talking about this months ago. Prepare and get things done and go and get things, you know, if you needed to order things, get them ordered, albeit this article's also talking about issues with parcels from America, not only from, but look, you name the country and you're going to have issues because at the end of the day, they're going to get, they've got issues in their own countries, in the country of origin where the parcels originate, and we're going to have issues here because there are some goods, as we've shared before, even ordering from the local coal stores or delivery trucks, you end up with half the items that you ordered, and they're delaying the order. We've got bottled gas in the premises, I make sure that we order well in advance, and I make sure that I've got double points in the studio and in the main house, so that I've got backups all the time. So when one goes, because I know that if you're only relying on one bottled tank of gas, you're out. It's days, and even then they postpone it before they deliver. So you can come unstuck. So you've got to start planning better for your daily essentials, your weekly, monthly, quarterly, whatever it is. We got to start looking at all these issues, taking those posts that Tarek and yourself put out, taking them more seriously because I love the charts that he puts out and the images that he puts out with regards to the shipping lines and how many ships are sitting outside of ports waiting to be offloaded. It's frightening, it's alarming, and it as we've been saying over and over again, 2021 was a time to put your head down, tail up, and work. Because things are going to get worse before they get better, and 2022 is going to really make that's when we're really going to feel a lot more pain.
No, I think that's right. And a couple of interesting observations from me. I went to my normal Coles the other day to do my weekly shop as I do here, masked up and everything, but there was no milk. I mean, how can there not be milk? It just shows you that we've got wobbly supply chains, right? And they said, well, yeah, it'll be here sometime, but we're not sure when. Okay. Well, milk's pretty standard. And then I went around the corner to grab some porridge oats, and there were no porridge oats. So I can't make me porridge for breakfast. This is disaster.
it is, Martin. It is. This is why I have to go on my midnight runs. To other parts of Sydney, especially to get Dusty and Evan their treats. I can't get it locally. I've just got to put the balaclava on and put the mask on and go out there and go on midnight runs. Otherwise, they don't get their treats, and then they stay up all night, and they're not getting enough sleep.
No, absolutely. And the other point I just wanted to make was that we talked about Australia Post, but of course, it's also true that in the US, the postal service there has basically said we're not handling any more parcels for international transit because there's not enough planes, right, to be able to take them because there are no passenger planes. That would be good, wouldn't it? A passenger train from the US to here, that might take a bit longer. The passenger planes, so that they're not actually shipping. So that means that if anybody wants to buy anything from overseas in the US, particularly from any stores in the US, you're going to be in strife for some time.
Well, that's right. Well, that's what we said anyway months ago with regards to preparing, making sure that you ordered and you bought your Christmas gifts, because again, and just trying to help people and warm people and so that people can get ready a lot earlier than the general public, and not get left behind or not get caught up with a frantic rush on the 11th hour to get the essentials and gifts, whatever it is, for Christmas and moving forward. It's a sad fact, but I feel it is going to get worse before it gets better.
No, I think that's right, exactly. Okay, now this is the moment of revelation, right? You've figured out how to actually avoid the bug. So what's the secret, Edwin?
Well, the tip for the week, and for those that have lasted throughout the whole podcast, this is it. I've worked it out, and I'm sticking to it, and it works because, I've been watching very carefully what's been happening in Victoria with the AFL Grand Final, and also very carefully with the NRL Grand Final in Queensland. And that little bastard didn't show up at any of those events. And for those that the people that congregated afterwards, let me say, Mark, I'm sure there were more than two getting together. Probably closer to 200 at a time, to celebrate the team's wins. So, in all my deductive reasoning and research and investigative research that I did with regards to this little bastard, this little bug, I figured that as long as you're wearing a football guernsey, you're safe.
You mean that the football jersey actually scares it off?
That's it. It really scares it off. Even if you forget to put your mask on, even if you're not jabbed, once you got your dong on a football guernsey, you're safe. The only thing is obviously we're moving into summer, so I'd prefer to put on an AFL guernsey than an NRL because of those long sleeves. But look, it's got to work, Martin. It's got to work. And the other thing is the police leave you alone as long as you got a guernsey. So that's it. I'm going out there. I used to go for Eastern Suburbs back in the late 80s. That's when the super when the code was about to change, and that's when I stopped following footy altogether. From one code to another. But anyway, regardless, after that, I used to go for East back then. So I figured I'm going to go for East again, and I'm going to go look for a guernsey and dong it on every time I go out, and police will leave me alone, and most importantly, the little bug will leave me alone as well.
Well, there you go. You heard it here, folks. This is Edwin's latest theory. Good luck with it. Got to laugh, though, haven't you? You got to laugh. Now, I want to ask you before we disappear, right? Your ensuite bath outside next to your veggie patch, right? What's going on with that?
Look, that's phase two, Martin. It's all about recycling. So, I figured, look, if I can find anything on the property in the house that we pull out to as we're renovating that can hold a bit of dirt and can hold about 100 to 150 mils of dirt, I can grow something in it. So I am making use of everything that's about around the place. I'll turn that. I think I'm thinking of fixing that to the first raised bed that you showed there, and fixing it to the side, and I'm thinking of growing onions and potatoes in that.
Okay, very good. Well, of course, it does have a drainage hole on the bottom, so it should work fine.
I'll drill in a few more holes, make sure everything's fine. But that's phase two. I figured hopefully by the end of the year I'll have. I'm very optimistic. I'm going to have 10 raised beds at the back there. But more importantly, that old shed, Martin, I'm waiting for the DA approval to come in for the high-rise development because they tell me that students are coming back. I'm going to build a high-rise there.
Well, that's right. And presumably you'll be able to give them half-built accommodation that they can complete themselves.
Look, what more do they want? They can,
brilliant.
They'll have chook, fresh eggs, chooks, rabbit food or veggies right in front of them, but I can't give them porridge, man. I can't give them porridge, and I stopped drinking milk years ago, so I don't buy milk. So I'm lactose intolerant, so I can't get off with them any of that.
Well, Edwin, as always, a very enjoyable chat with you, but I think some very important points in there too, if people can spot the difference between the humour and the key points. But thank you very much. Great work on the first of those raised beds. I look forward to seeing the next nine. You know, I hope you'll keep the dimensions roughly symmetric and similar so it looks as though it's organised rather than all over the place. I shall look forward to seeing the next video.
Look. I think they're going to be a little bit different in shape and size and colour because, as I said, as I pull down the old shed, I'm going to be using the corrugated sheets there. And because the new raised beds that I was looking, you know, through online, they're something like $650, Martin. That's it's ludicrous. Recycling's the go for me. Moving forward.
Yeah, no, recycling is the way to go. It's certainly my modus operandi, even in the studio here. I recycle all sorts of things in funny ways because, you know, you can actually make things work and save money on the way through, which is pretty good, isn't it?
Look, definitely. And hopefully our viewers enjoyed the show once again and the tip, most of all, and they'll join us next week, mate.
Yeah, thank you, Edwin. We'll see you then and have a great week. See you. Bye.
All the best.